Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is Oklahoma City-based travel and humor writer Shelby Simpson. Simpson is the author of a book on travel titled Good Globe, but it's her latest book that's getting far more buzz. It's a humor book titled We're All Bad in Bed, a raunchy retelling of epic bedroom and intimate moment failures. While today's show is PG, a little parental guidance necessary, the book and stage reading it spawned is definitely for mature audiences. The book came out a couple years ago, but the book has spawned is a live show titled Bad in Bed Live. It's a never-before-seen style of book reading featuring 90s hip-hop, dancing, and multimedia. Simpson brings the stories of her book to life in a fairly crazy performance piece that sold out 6 shows at Oklahoma City's Tower Theater last summer. Now Bad in Bed Live is embarking on a short mini-tour, which comes to Tulsa next weekend, August 1st through the 3rd, at the Tulsa Little Theater, featuring a show and a pre-show featuring Tulsa musicians Jordan Hale and Nicholas Foster, who will accompany local poets Amy Luznicki, Miko White, and Fitote Mashari, who will perform original spoken word works to open the show. You can get a preview of Simpson's work with a traditional book signing tonight at Magic City Books. She'll be signing tonight at 7 o'clock. She joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Shelby Simpson, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Rich. Thank you so much for having me. It is my pleasure.
Well, you're going to be doing this show, live show here that's based on your second book.
That's right.
But I'm going to take it back a few years because when you first started writing, you're writing about traveling. You were traveling all over the world, and so your first book was Good Globe.
That's right.
And then the follow-up book was We're All Bad in Bed.
Oops.
That's kind of a big jump, isn't
it? That's wrong. You're not supposed to do that. But I did. Although, my argument is that I still write narrative nonfiction, and I'm a humorist, and I write for everybody but for women. It's aimed at women, and it's just beginning to end a fun time in a book. You know, it's just a fun time in a book. So it's a beach read is what I say.
How did the idea come to you to actually write about that? I mean, obviously it's a story that's usually best told over multiple cocktails.
Right.
But how did you decide to write these stories?
So I got my master's in professional writing at OU, and I graduated in 2015, and I was just wrapping up Good Globe. Mm-hmm. It was graduation evening. I did something in the bedroom with my current partner, Chad, that I was so like just mortified. Like, oh my gosh, who does that? I had just failed majorly, and it was hysterical. And I ended up talking to some of my girlfriends about it, and we were just having such a good laugh about it. And I thought, you know what? This story plus the hundreds that I have and that my girlfriends have and that we've been laughing over cocktails in our stories for a decade or more, I thought, I really need to seal these in history and change everyone's names except for mine for fun. That's honestly the bottom answer is for fun.
And I'm sure you heard a lot of crazy stories.
Oh, my gosh. And that's what the craziest part of this book was, that when I said I was writing it and when I finished it and people would ask me, oh, you've got your second book out. Is it about travel? No, it's not. What's it about? Oh, it's about sex. And they would say, oh. And I'd say, well, but it's about embarrassing sex moments. And they'd say, oh, I've got a story for you. It's like all of a sudden the interest got turned up to 11 when they knew that it was about messing up.
Well, probably when you said it's about sex, interest was like, can we change the subject?
Yeah, a little bit of discomfort, right?
Yeah.
But not when embarrassment is involved. So once you push the humor button on it, people are ready to talk. And I'm saying everybody, from people I didn't want telling me, like my friend's parents over breakfast. So you're like, I don't really need to hear that story, but thank you. Yes, it might go in the book.
Well, that is the serious work of an important journalist who will actually sit down and listen to those stories of people of a certain age telling embarrassing sex stories.
Right. And it was, the age range was outrageous from 20.
Were you surprised the first time, say, a person of, say, a generation or two older than you actually said, well, let me tell you this story?
Yeah. But then, no, knowing that, like, the decade that it occurred was probably, like, late 70s. And then you're like, well, that makes
a lot of sense. So you don't have any geriatric.
I don't. I know of some. I did not include them.
Well, so as you began hearing these stories, when did you say this is going to be a book?
I was going to write the book anyway, based mm-hmm. on my own stories. So obviously the top story that I was really going to showcase was what happened to me in 2015. And then I was just going to compile my own stories. I had a few. And then my girlfriend's stories. So I just kind of, it was like the best of, the greatest hits.
As this book began to take shape, I assume everybody had a story for you.
Yeah, everybody. And so some got included, most didn't. Most I just used from my girlfriends and the stories that I had. But I had such a great time listening.
Now, this book came out a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So what was the reaction when it came out? I mean, I assume once you put this book out there, you began getting...
I got some texts from from some of my good girlfriends and some acquaintances. And like the first one, they were all of pictures of them crying from laughing.
Oh.
And one said, I peed a little. So I was like, well, I'm onto something here. I'm doing well. So people were having a very good time with the book. I mean, it's very different than Good Globe, right? You're mm-hmm. reading about world travel in one. You're reading about sex in this one. But I think what's great about the book and what people did say was that it's not exhausting. It does have a storyline. So you can follow that and you get into some education. You get into some, I don't know, more philosophical thoughts about sex. But it's not a deep book. Definitely, it's for fun. But it's a fun walk through sex.
But as it turned out, this book was a couple of years ago, yet this topic has stayed with you for the last couple of years because you
yeah.
created a live show.
Strange.
So how did that come about?
Oh, man. So, yeah, not my intention. And it was funny. When this came out, I actually was hesitant and nervous because I've lived all over the world. And coming back to Oklahoma was very different for me because it's so conservative. I am not conservative. When I released this book, I wondered. What does it matter how I feel if I know that everyone around me might frown upon this book? So I actually was quite nervous when I published it and released it. And I didn't want the sex label pinned to me because I'm not just always talking about sex. That's just one side of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't want everyone to then start thinking that this is the only work I did. But I released it anyway. And I didn't get the sex label pinned to me at first. Actually, not much happened. We just kind of continued on. I was starting to write my third book. And I go back to New Zealand annually. That's my second home. And it was one of my good friends there who asked me how sales were going. I was like, oh, it could be better, you know. And she said, have you thought about getting in front of people and doing a book reading? And I laughed at her because I was like, oh, you want me to read about this sex fail I had in Barnes & Noble? Is that what you want? Like chapter one, gather around children, you know? So like that's never going to happen. And to me, it seemed so stodgy anyway, just not my speed. So I rolled my eyes and left. And then the seed had been planted and it started to grow on its own. But I went to go see David Sedaris talk at Rose State. And he is my hero, hands down. He is actually the reason I started writing narrative nonfiction. Fiction is my first love, but he just changed everything for me.
And seeing a live appearance is you know, something.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to read and it's very
right.
hilarious, but to see
right.
him read is something completely
so like
different.
At 22, you know, he inspired me. And then here I was seeing him at 38, I think is when I saw him. And his book reading was not what I expected. I guess I'd had only been to book readings in Barnes & Noble. But this was at Rose State in an auditorium. And
people
sold
are
out.
Going nuts.
Going nuts.
Yeah.
It was stand-up comedy, but being read to you.
It's literary
which is
stand-up.
Such, yeah, it's literary stand-up, which is such a pleasure. You think it wouldn't work. You think it'd be boring, and it's the opposite. It's amazing. And people were going nuts. It was 2 hours, sold out, him, a podium,
yeah.
the end. And I walked away thinking, oh, my God, that's a book reading that I could do, that I could get on board with. And then I saw Anthony Bourdain. And the only difference between what he did and what David Sedaris did was that he had a screen behind him that flipped through travel photos. So he had some multimedia to back up his storytelling. And another factor that really shocked me was that neither of them read their books that they were promoting. They just read excerpts from journal entries or short stories, and then they would bridge it to a page out of their book and then hop back into these just kind of short stories about their lives or what they're up to. So it was a structure that I hadn't thought about either. And after Anthony Bourdain, I actually went away and just was kind of angry at myself because I usually think way outside the box. It shocked me that I was so in the box for book reading, right? But then after I saw Anthony Bourdain, it was done and done. So I thought, oh, well, I'm just going to write a book reading I would want to see.
This and so it, this became the show.
It did. And it's
Bad
because,
and Bad Live.
Yeah. And I have, I start chapters with nasty 90s hip hop lyrics in this, in my book, because that's in Enid, oddly enough. When I was a teenager growing up, it was early 90s. And in Enid, that's all we listened to was like gangster rap, like nasty, nasty stuff. And I love it. It is still like the heartbeat of my soul is nasty 90s rap. So, and I love that music so much. And it's the soundtrack of my sexuality. And so I threw these lyrics in, and plus I think it's funny. So I thought in my book reading, I wanted to incorporate that. And I also wanted dancers because I'm obsessed with dancers. So I was like, I'm just going to have fly girls and fly guys. I'm going to write this whole thing. Wrote it and then didn't know what to do with it at that point. But I was very fortunate that I've had a very good job for the past 2 years, that I was able to save some money. And I've learned, you know, as you get older, you start learning little tricks to the trade. And I believe one secret to life is hire the best you can and then back off and let them do their thing. And so I knew that if I wanted to get on stage and if I wanted to have all these people around me, I needed someone who understood the stage and who understood dancers and rappers, and didn't know if I could afford him, but just went there anyway and got to Matthew Alvin Brown. He is outstanding. He's a cornerstone member of the theater community in Oklahoma City. He's worked out of Hollywood. He's a writer. He is the word. I didn't know him. And when I went to him, and then when he agreed to do it, word started getting around that I'd hired him, and people would come to me and say, "You hired Matt Alvin Brown to do your book reading?" They said, "He's a genius." And I was like, "Oh, well, of course. That's what I meant to do, see?"
And you're calling this, you're still calling this a book reading, but this is not a book reading. This is like a...
On acid, we call it. It's a book reading on acid. But you're right. It doesn't behave like a book reading.
It's not a book reading.
It's not.
It's a show.
But no, but it is. This is the beauty of it. It is. We've just disguised it as this highly entertaining, crazy comedy.
And so... I guess you rented the Tower Theater in Oklahoma City.
I did.
And just said, okay, let's see who comes.
Yeah. Let's do it. But I knew I had this crew around me that was unstoppable. Like Matt, Hechapoose is our choreographer. She's worked with Busta Rhymes. She's worked with Paul McCartney. She's worked with a lot of other people, traveled worldwide. Our dancers have done a number of things. We've got a Thunder Girl in the cast. We've got a dancer that's performed in Brazil. We've got the director of OKC Improv. So these are the people that are on stage with me nonstop. So I knew that we were solid, right? I also have this amazing marketing team, and I trusted them deeply. And they tend to be magic makers, where it is like, let's plan something and you'll make people show up, right? And they're like, yeah, we've got the wand right here. Zing! And people show up. And so actually, though, Matt told me that I asked him, this is how ignorant I was, like, how many nights should we do? And he said, well, a normal opening run for an original work, which I didn't even know the difference. Now I know that, like, most of the shows you see, obviously they're not written here in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
They come from New York. They come from all over here. As an original piece, he said six nights. You do three, like a Thursday, Friday, Saturday on one weekend,
next weekend.
And the next weekend.
Yeah, and get like, less, if it's good, people word of
come.
Mouth. And yeah, you're...
And I said, oh, great. But to me, it was just a number. Like, we were supposed to have six nights, and then Tower Theater didn't have two weekends available. They had one, and I was like, I didn't even talk to Matt about it. This is honestly how stupid I was. I was like, well, then we'll just do all six on one weekend. Yay. So I rented it for one weekend, decided to do one on Thursday night, two shows on Friday, two shows on Saturday, and then like a matinee on Sunday, because I was convinced people would want to get drunk at 11 a.m. and talk about bedroom fails. This is just my...
Right after
my,
church.
Right. My Pollyanna attitude was like, wee, this is going to be so much fun. And I don't like to be told ticket sales. I don't ask. And I told my marketing director specifically, don't you ever tell me. So later she told me that going into it, we had sold not many tickets for anything. The only thing was that opening night was looking good because we are friends and family and we'd invited some influencers. So we sold out opening night and then it was just dominoes. So once we performed, dun, 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 we sold out all of them because word got around because it's a great show.
And so this year you're bringing it to Tulsa.
That's right.
And you're also taking it to, Denver
and Kansas City to prove concept. Because at this point, it's one thing to sell out in Oklahoma City. If we sell out here, if people love it here, if people love it in Denver, people love it in Kansas City, oh, then I'm cooking with gas.
Uh-huh.
So at that point, the plan would be a national tour and international. We've already had some asks. There was a woman from Chicago that was in the audience at Tower. She asked if we would bring it there.
Now, is the show you reading from the book, or as I understood it, there are poets also reading?
This is the magic of Matthew Alvin Brown. He deconstructed what I'd written so that my storytelling helps come to life. I am reading, mm-hmm. and then certain dancers and other actors on stage will step up and take over for a character that I'm talking about
mm-hmm.
and act it out. And then I engage with them, and then they go back to chilling. And then we've got some pictures that we show, and then we've got music that we play. And it is a party. We have audience involvement, so be ready for that. I advise having a few drinks before you come. That kind of party.
My guest today is Shelby Simpson, a humor and travel writer. Her most recent book is We're All Bad in Bed, which has now become a live show, Bad in Bed Live, which takes place next week, Thursday through Saturday, at the Tulsa Little Theater, three mm-hmm. performances. And sounds like this is a thing that could become a national tour down the road.
I think so. It is super unique. And I believe I can say that because I've lived in seven countries and traveled to 45. And I go to a lot of art exhibits and just art functions worldwide. And I haven't seen anything like this.
Mm-hmm.
And
now, so, it's kind of interesting because the concept you have is sort of tailors on a lot of a popular niche now. Say the moth storytelling.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of it has something to do with that and the sort of that true storytelling mode. And there was a Tulsa native who actually had this story in, she actually did a series in New York where people read from their teenage diaries. You know, and it's
so that's similar.
Yeah, you know, it's that sort of thing of looking back and embarrassment.
Right.
Embarrassment and,
right.
and fails.
Letting it all
and,
hang out.
Yeah.
And that's what I think what really vibed with people was that it's true storytelling. And even though it sucks, it's not vulgar. It's just so honest. And it's a spotlight on all the things that you have done that you might be too embarrassed to talk about with anyone else but your friends. But we just let it all hang out on stage.
Well, that's coming up next weekend, Thursday through Saturday at the Tulsa Little Theater. Take us back to when you first started writing. You said your first book was Good Globe. It was a travel book.
Yeah.
What was the particular take? Because there are hundreds of travel books. What,
sure.
what was the point you were trying to get? Was it
this
for
is
female,
a memoir.
Female travelers
yeah.
or more about your story?
It's definitely a nod toward females to get them going, but it's toward anyone who... I meant it to be as a book to encourage people to spend a chapter of their lives overseas, not just pass through on vacation. And maybe take it like up to a year. Spend another year in another culture if you can, if you're interested.
What did you learn from that experience?
Oh, man.
Now, sounds like it's been four or five different cultures or six or seven.
Yeah, a lot. It has changed me for the better. It has humbled me,
Where was the first place you stayed for like a year?
Spain. Mm-hmm.
And what was that experience like? I assume you knew did you know the language going
no,
in?
No, I
was
a toddler.
Yeah.
Like literally, like felt like a toddler.
Okay.
I was 20.
Okay.
So I was studying during university, but you turn into a toddler when you can't speak the language because you have to grunt and point and mimic. And it was debilitating. You know, you're like, I can't even order a drink. This is driving me nuts, you know. But then it taught me the magic of the brain as well, because after a while, like, I used to bug my professor, when will I learn, when will I learn? I'm struggling. Mm-hmm. And she said, you've got to relax. It'll come. And then boom, one day I was watching the news, frustrated as ever. And then it dawned on me that I had kind of caught the last minute. And you do start dreaming in Spanish or whatever language you're inundated in. And that's the sign that your brain is starting to braid together the information for you. That's why infants don't have to learn it. Their brain creates the pathways for it. And your brain can still create the pathways for it later in life. It's more difficult. It takes time, as you see. But it was fascinating, that part to me. And then also just the little ways that life is so different in other places. And that other cultures are, they just do so many things so differently. And I think sometimes in the United States, you grow up thinking we do things best. And that taught me that that is not true. That there are a lot of different ways of doing things. And I don't think one way is better or worse. It just depends who you are and what works for you. And that's why I think being introduced to all these different ways of living is a huge benefit to anyone, because then you can go anywhere and apply it to you.
You said you spend a good part of every year in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Well, what's the attraction to New Zealand other than the fact that it's a gorgeous place?
Yeah. Well, that's...
And it's also at a long way from everywhere.
Right, right. So I'm a nature freak. Uh-huh. So that's a big deal to me. The way it's preserved, the way it's so unique, it's prehistoric. And just tons of different, everything from a rainforest to a mountain to caves to sand dunes to plains. So anyway, but the people are always the biggest selling point in the end. And Kiwis, I think, are super similar to Americans with their sense of humor. They are a ton of fun, and they are kind people. That's what really, really sucked me in, was the community spirit there and the way they handle each other. Like, they've got their own cop show, and I honestly thought that it was a spoof. The first time I was watching it with this guy I was dating there, and I was like, is this for real?
And he said, no, this is serious.
Yeah, he said, no, this is a drama. Serious. Yeah, because the cops will pull someone over, and they're like, are you okay? Do you need us to, you know, oh, you've had a hard day. Okay. Well, that makes sense. Let's escort you home, you know?
That's the drama.
That's the drama, was that someone had a hard day.
Well, that sounds like a great place to live.
Doesn't it just? And I think what they invest in suits me, as far as they're not a status-driven culture. Like, I mean, not always, but a lot of the time when you're talking to someone, they won't ask you what you do.
Probably there's a ever. Lot of cultures like that, actually.
Yeah. They just want to talk to you.
Yeah. No, United States, this is one of our things, is we...
That's like question one.
You know, and I think a lot of times it's because we are a malleable social class. We have malleable right. social classes, so we have to distinguish
we
between
need to
classes.
Figure out who we have to compartmentalize
yeah,
you, or
right.
we need to label you. So
right,
that we
where
can have
in
this
certain societies,
right.
that's, you know, it's apparent as I walk up to you, you know, exactly.
What status yeah, like yeah, you belong to.
Yeah.
What area? I feel like over in New Zealand, you can't tell mm-hmm. where they are in life, but the bigger part of it is they don't want to tell. They don't care. They have this saying called tall poppy syndrome. Have you heard that?
No.
So it's like a poppy field. Mm-hmm. And they don't like any tall poppies. They like everyone to just kind of be, you know, your medium poppy, keep rocking.
Socialism.
Kind of, I guess. But it's more about the attitude. I mean, that's fine to rise to the top.
No,
just don't act
right.
like it. Don't be a
yeah.
chump.
Yeah.
You know, when you drive up revving your Lambo at a stoplight, you're going to get a lot of eye rolls, you know, and like a back turn to you. And actually, I think part of the reason it became such a popular spot for famous people is that they love ignoring famous people. That's like one of their favorite things. And they're really good at it, you know, just because they want to give people their space.
Yeah.
So I have read anyway that a lot of stars adore going to New Zealand because they can go have dinner, they can have lunch and shop and blah, blah.
My guest today is Shelby Simpson, a humor and travel writer. Her books include Good Globe and most recently We're All Bad in Bed, which has now spawned a live show, Bad in Bed Live, which takes place Thursday through Saturday, August 1st through the 3rd at the Tulsa Little Theater. And you're taking this from here to Denver and Kansas City. When is that happening? In
so
August?
We have a week, it's all in August, crammed in.
All right. Yeah. And so the plan is if these go well, you'll do a tour.
We will.
What's the criteria for figuring out if this works in other cities other than Oklahoma City? Ticket sales or enthusiasm of the crowds?
Because both. I think a combination. Yeah. It's not all about money, but if it don't make dollars, it don't make sense, right? Because in the end, there are a lot of factors that dictate whether or not there are butts in seats. So I think the reaction is super important. If people that are there love it, well, then that's a great indicator, right? And then we would just have to figure out the marketing better, I would suppose. Mm-hmm. But definitely, if we fill the rooms, that's a good indicator that people that were there were talking. So it's a balance that we have to figure out, and we're going to sit back and watch when we're finished. Yeah.
In the meantime, you're finishing that third book that was supposed to come out last year.
Yeah.
What are you writing about now? Is it something completely different again?
Well, that's what's so funny. So I was always going to write a travel series.
Mm.
And so this is the second book in my three-part travel series. So Good Globe is part one. The second book is about backpackers. I haven't named it yet. But it's a glimpse at how backpackers are and why they do what they do. Because I was a backpacker. I would say now I've kind of gone off that, but just getting older.
So is this backpacking in the United States or around the world?
Worldwide. Because what a lot of Americans, it's not a rite of passage to us. Whereas in a lot of countries, world travel is a rite of passage. Especially in New Zealand, they even, they call it your OE, which is your overseas experience.
Uh-huh.
And you're expected to take that for at least a year. And usually quite young, 19, 20, parents are like, off you go. Go get crazy around the planet. and I think Europeans really latch on to that idea
as
well.
Now I always think of that as a backpacking culture, but it's all hostel-based and you're staying in dorms and things like that.
It still is worldwide. Yeah. Hostels are everywhere you go.
Well, that's true.
Now things are kind of starting to shift because of digital era ramping up just harder and harder and harder to where people use their devices for everything. And now you can use your device just about everywhere. Back when I started traveling, when I was in Spain, email wasn't out yet, and we had the black screens with the orange rolling letters. Maybe email was out, but it was just basic. And then when I moved to Australia and then to New Zealand, Ask Jeeves was what was going on.
That's right.
Yeah.
There was a blast from the past.
Right. Smartphones, not a thing. Or maybe if they were, no one had one. You didn't even really have a cell phone because you were always worried about it roaming and the cost. And you couldn't get any reception anyway. So it was a time of travel books for your guides. So I used a lot of Lonely Planet was my travel Bible. And then talking to people. So I think it's a shame that that's gone away. I guess a lot of travelers now don't need that. And I talk about that in the book. I actually interviewed these three girls in the backpacker book who are millennials. They did a 3-month tour of Eastern Europe. And their experience was night and day to mine because they use apps for everything. It starts in Honduras, and actually that part is about expats. So people that have maybe started out backpacking and then just decided to stay somewhere and or fled the United States and decided to make another country home. There are a lot of expats in Honduras. In the book, I go to three locations, Honduras, Ireland, and into Brazil, but into the Amazon in Brazil.
All right. Well, we look forward to that.
Yeah.
Shelby, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on. I was so excited to come in here.
Humor and travel writer Shelby Simpson speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. She'll be signing her book, We're All Bad in Bed, tonight at 7 at Magic City Books. And her live show, Bad in Bed Live, takes place next Thursday through Saturday, August 1st through the 3rd at the Tulsa Little Theater. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.